It's The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina, in for Kate Archer-Kent. The values we have and the way we operate as a society can tell us whether people will choose to wear masks to protect other people's health. That's part of new research from MIT Sloan looking at culture. It could help us better understand the choices people have made during the COVID-19 pandemic and how they're likely to act in the future. There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. Do you see masks as a protection for yourself or for others first? What's the main reason you would wear a mask? Do you wear it for political reasons or for health reasons? Let's talk about it here on the Ideas Network, 1-800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Alex English is a researcher in the Department of Psychology and Behavioral Sciences at Zhejiang University. That's in China. Alex, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. What has it been like as an American in China watching how people in these very different countries responded to a contagious virus?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I've been in China the entire outbreak. I got back actually in early 2020, and that's when the coronavirus was just unfolding here. And actually what I was watching around me here was everyone was telling each other to wear masks, to take protection, to keep distance. And I was thinking about this as like, is this for themselves or is this like a communal sort of feeling that they were having? And then when things started to get under control here, I was watching how the COVID pandemic took place outside. And I was telling my friends and family back in the States, hey, guys, get the mask. You know, you got to stock up, you know, do whatever it takes to protect you and others around you. And so I was thinking about this question. Is it possible that culture could matter in whether we're likely to wear masks or not?
So is that what inspired you and colleagues to study culture and mask wearing?
Yeah, it was a really interesting phenomenon because, you know, if you remember back in the early days, there was the CDC released the guidelines saying, you know, masks don't help. They're only for healthcare workers and people who are sick. And then about 6 weeks later, I think in April, they announced, you know, hey, everyone should start wearing masks. And shortly after, I guess maybe there was this confusion or people then started not recognizing, hey, masks do help. Or maybe it was just, you know, they're not very comfortable, which everyone, I think, would agree. So we started thinking about the question, is it possible if we take out some of the other factors that we know will matter, such as like population density or political affiliation, will we still find the effect that culture, something like collectivism, thinking about others and being communal, if that would still predict someone's ability to wear a mask? And we found that it held up.
And that collectivism, that sense of community, what's the opposite of that? Can you give us some examples of those places?
You know, you're thinking about yourself, more individualistic. You're wearing a mask for you. You're not thinking about others. You know, or maybe you're just it's could be a sort of a violation of your freedom or your right to wear a mask or not wear a mask. And I'm not making any stance about it. But what we just found was that people who tended to share those cultural values at a country level or at a, you know, in the U.S., each state is classified based on how collective or not collective they are. And we found that that held up within the United States. So we used two large studies that were gathered at county level data. And we found that states like Hawaii or California were wearing masks to a greater degree than like North Dakota or Texas or Florida. Obviously, those states are also linked closely with political affiliation. But once we took out that factor, we still found the effect of collectivism, of being more communal and thinking about the other.
How can you remove the factor of political affiliation when trying to study culture? They feel so intertwined.
Yeah, actually, they're correlated. They're related about 0.4. But what we can do when we use statistical modeling is we can add in these variables into the model and see how much things change. And if we take out certain factors or add them in, we can account for them or control for them. And so with all of those factors in, like the amount of COVID cases, the population density, whether someone was more likely to like more political or more likely to vote for Republican, even with those in, those did predict mask usage or less mask usage, but collectivism still was an important factor that accounted for almost 20% of the variance in explaining someone's willingness or not willingness to use masks.
Alex English is a research fellow at Zhejiang University. He joins us from Shanghai, China, and we're taking your calls about mask wearing and culture at 800-642-1234. We've got Jim from Juneau who wants to join the conversation. Hey, Jim.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Okay. At first, I was very happy to wear a mask. Didn't like seeing that the older people who had a better chance of getting sick were having to isolate more than others. But at this point, we are throwing away vaccines because people aren't getting vaccinated. I feel that we are at a point where it's the survival of the fittest. And if they do not want to wear the mask, they might end up having to deal with the consequences of the pandemic. And, you know, I'm sorry to say that, but people don't take the time to do the research.
Hey, Jim, thank you so much for that. I want to make sure that Alex has an opportunity to respond because I hear Jim going kind of back and forth with ideals and saying, really showing us this is not a clear-cut issue.
Yeah. Thanks, Jim, for the call and the point there. So this research was done way before vaccines were available, last summer in July, all the way up until November. And I'm no way saying that you need to wear a mask or you don't at this point. I think it's definitely your choice. But the research does say that masks do help if you are unvaccinated, and perhaps we could think about this in another way. Is here in China, even though everyone is getting vaccines, they're still thinking about the chance that it could spread, and they're thinking about protecting others. So that sort of value of like the other, the communal sense, that's what our study had shown, was that some societies may be way more willing to do that than others. And that's how we were able to show that there was that effect. I think vaccines would be another really interesting study to look at. Is it possible that this value could also be found within the uptake of getting vaccines? I haven't done the study yet myself.
Good to know. Thanks again, Jim, for giving us a call at 800-642-1234. We've also got Steve from Sun Prairie on the line. Hey, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I live in the Madison area, and Madison is probably one of the most communal areas in our country. And before June 2nd, everyone was wearing the mask. Everyone was saying how important it was to wear the mask. It was almost a cult. Then the moment the restrictions are left, everybody took the mask off. So it almost seems like it's not a sense of communal, but it's just if someone in authority tells me to do something, I'm going to do it. And the moment I don't have that authority being told on me, I won't do it.
Steve, thanks for bringing that up. Alex, what do you think?
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Steve. In the academic terms, we call it tightness. So cultural tightness is the social norm and how willing people are to accept a norm. And if they violate that norm, like wearing a mask, how likely they were to be punished. So that's one thing, one important factor that we also had to look at was, hey, is it possible that these social norms could be driving people to wear masks? And if so, hey, if someone doesn't wear the mask, are they likely to be punished or, to be, fined perhaps? I think now, or maybe if we think going forward, it's possible that some societies may be putting in those fines or punishments for someone that may or may not wear masks. But in terms of that time, we didn't have a mask norm, and there was no fines or punishments. So I agree. I think there is this idea of, hey, this norm, oh gosh, there's maybe an uptick in cases. We should all sort of wear masks. Hey, let's follow this approach and let's see what everyone around me is doing. That's kind of the intertwine between tightness and this idea of collectivism, which is very similar in nature.
When you're talking about cultural tightness, does it apply to communities that operate more individualistically too, or is it really connected to the collectivism, that sense of doing things for others and for the greater good?
Yeah, that's a great question. So actually, there is the opposite of tightness is looseness. So some societies are looser than others, meaning they allow more deviance from a norm, you know, like coloring your hair or having tattoos or things like that, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, maybe in some societies, maybe, whoa, would be seen as you're deviating from the norm. So yeah, there is a link between collectivism and tightness. It doesn't explain they're not equivalent, meaning like a country like Thailand, they're very collectivistic, but they're also very loose in norms. And a state like Hawaii is very collectivistic, but also very loose. So it's not always equals, you know, tightness equals collectivists. It could vary across country and across state line as well.
We are talking about how our cultural values connect to our actions, especially when it comes to wearing masks to protect public health. Our guest, Alex English, is a researcher at Zhejiang University, stays with us here on the Ideas Network. And you can join in. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Do you think individualism plays a role in whether people will wear masks? Are you wearing masks still because other people are continuing to wear them? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. This conversation continues. This is The Morning Show. Campaigns for wearing masks encouraged people to put on face coverings for themselves, but also to protect other people. Our guest is a researcher who says culture is a driving factor in whether that message resonates, because people do different things based on the norms and expectations in our own communities. Thanks for being with us on the Ideas Network. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina. Our guest is Alex English, a researcher in the Department of Psychology and Behavioral Sciences at Zhejiang University. And you can join the conversation now at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. And we've got Kiram from Wisconsin Rapids on the line. Hey, Kiram.
Hello. I've noticed that it's very different from other places because, well, when you notice there are certain people wearing masks, yeah, there people are more likely to wear masks around them. In Maryland, it's the same thing. In Wisconsin, it's pretty similar, except for the fact that it's a little looser around here because there's more space and people feel more freely to walk around.
Oh, thank you for those observations, Kiram. We really appreciate your call. Alex, let's talk about that last piece. Kiram mentioned that people feel like there's more outdoor space. The CDC guidelines tell us being outdoors is, you know, less likely for transmission of this virus. So is there an aspect to this that we should really be thinking about place?
Yeah, I think thank you for the call. That's awesome that you're listening, and good points and observations, actually comparing or thinking about Maryland to Wisconsin. And I think situational factors do matter, meaning if you're around a group of people and maybe they're wearing a mask, maybe now we may feel a little uncomfortable and we may put on our mask. What's the phrase, like mask up, right? And then also, obviously, it varies, of course, by where you're going. Maybe you're going into an indoor place where it's likely that you need to wear a mask. It's kind of mandated by the store. Or if you think about where in the city that you're living, if you're in an urban or rural part of the city, maybe you're also feeling, hey, I have more space. And also summer's coming. You're also out and about. So it's, yeah, a lot of factors play into this. That we now know are very, you know, valuable features of when to wear a mask and when not to. I think it's important for our study to know we did this very early on when we didn't know what we know now, right? So we just asked the question, hey, or the question was, how often are you wearing masks? when do you wear masks and how frequently do you wear masks? That was basically the question. So I agree, now we have to start thinking about those various factors and the situations that we're in and when we need to wear a mask and not wear it.
Alex, can you talk more about that idea of just social pressure when you go into these even smaller, you know, we've been talking about communities or states, but really when you go into these smaller situations and how that could affect whether someone chooses to wear a mask and whether that's about themselves or other people?
Yeah, I think it's a great point. I mean, it's almost like our car keys and wallet now, right? Maybe our mask will just always be in our back pocket or in our purse, and we'll have it just in case we're in a situation where someone may say, hey, you know, I'd prefer if you wear a mask, or hey, I feel like I'm coming down with a cold. I think we should all wear masks. So I think this is one of those social norms that's going to be long lasting. At least I would predict so, that we, even though we'll all be vaccinated, we may still carry our mask in our car just as a backup, right? So I think those small situations and those small gatherings, and that's obviously without sort of any mandates where we go into a store and there's someone that tells us, hey, please wear your mask when you go in. This is just those natural settings or those interpersonal interactions that we may feel that we should mask up or not, right?
Mask wearing did become a cultural norm in East Asian countries after the 2003 SARS outbreak. Do you really think mask wearing will become more acceptable in the U.S.?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I've actually lived in China since 2007, and that was 4 years after SARS. And I lived near Hong Kong, where the outbreak was pretty prevalent. And I remember in those first few months when I arrived, I saw obviously a lot more people wearing masks than I would ever see in the States. And I asked a few people, and they all had very clear, vivid memories of those, you know, tough days in SARS. And when the outbreak happened here in China, you know, last year, I remember a lot of the people were saying, you know, it was this unknown pneumonia before we knew what it is now. They were saying, this is like SARS. We need to follow and do what we did then to, you know, to overcome this. And so people immediately started masking up. So I think there will be some ingrained feature of this where we're all going to be sort of hardwired differently because of what we've gone through over the last year. And I imagine that masks and social distancing will become something that we'll be more open to in the future. Not like we have to, but if it ever does come again, we'll be more prepared, right? And more ready to do what we need to get through it.
We've got Josh in Oak Creek who wants to get in on this conversation. Hi, Josh.
Hey there. So my comment is that I do like the fact that, you know, it's loosening up a bit with the mask. I mean, I've always worn one. You know, human beings weren't meant to be running around in masks. My point, though, is that as much as it's getting looser, I hope the norm doesn't go away or die, that a mask is important, because the public needs to realize that not only if you take COVID away, the mask took care of flu, strep, pneumonia, all the other fun ones that none of us want to get in the winter. And I plan on wearing one this winter in light of that. It just makes me wonder, by then, is the norm going to be, why is that guy wearing a mask?
Josh, thank you so much for bringing that up. And Alex, it sounds like Josh has hit on collectivism.
Yeah, a little bit. And also the norm feature, right? And then there's the part about how others are going to perceive you if you're wearing the mask. I think the mask is great in the winter there in Wisconsin because it's so cold with the wind and everything. So I'm hoping that people will be more open to wearing masks. I know I'm from Arizona. I know how hard it would be to wear one in the summer. It seems cool not to wear one in the summer. I mean, I guess it is kind of that personal choice. And I hope that there's not the mass stigma that we had very early on in the outbreak, where people were seen as, oh, you're wearing a mask, you're carrying the disease or something, you're the sick one. And I hope we're more open to just saying, oh, he's wearing a mask, whatever, you know, I'm not going to, that's my choice, you know, and there's not that stigma. But maybe what we need is some good public messaging and some, you know, some guidance from health officials or someone just to help promote that feature. If you want to wear a mask, sure, you know, do it, right? It's your choice too.
Sure, because public health leaders might be able to use this information for a future crisis beyond COVID-19.
Yeah. And also, you know, influenza and strep and all those terrible colds that we get to, we know that, you know, exerting those particles, we do reduce that when we wear a mask. So hopefully those small features will also be considered. You know, even if you catch a cold, you know, you can also be thinking of others and be like, hey, I'm not going to this meeting, but hey, I don't want to get anyone else sick. I'll wear my mask. If you all want to, that's cool too, type mm-hmm. of a thing.
Alex, we'll watch for more research from you. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too. Alex English is a researcher in the Department of Psychology and Behavioral Sciences at Zhejiang University. We talked about his research showing how our culture is a good predictor of whether we'll do things like wear masks to protect other people from getting sick. Up next is news. Then we discuss the staffing shortages threatening the water parks and restaurants and other attractions in Wisconsin Dells this summer. You can join in. Tell us about your experience at 800-642-1234. I'm Keeley Boltina. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin Dells is famous for being a vacation spot. It prides itself on its water parks and touristy excursions and places to shop and snack. All those attractions need workers to operate them. Thousands of people usually travel from around the world to spend the summers here. Not so this year. We're looking at what that means for the experience and the economics for businesses in the Dells. And we want to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. Do you plan on going to Wisconsin Dells? Do you own a business there? Or maybe you've worked summer jobs in Wisconsin Dells? Tell us about it at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Tom Deal is the president of Tommy Bartlett, Inc. in Wisconsin Dells and the president of the Attractions Association. Tom, thanks for joining us again on the Ideas Network.
Nice to be with you, Keeley.
There's a labor shortage happening across the country, many places right now, as summer closes in and things really begin to reopen in this stage of the pandemic. How bad is that shortage in Wisconsin Dells?
Well, certainly as a community, we knew this was going to happen because of the unavailability of J-1 students to our total workforce. The Trump administration put a prohibition on issuing any J-1 visas, and that expired in March. And so we've won April, May, and June to get fully engaged with the sponsors in each of the countries. The real slowdown has been the reaction of the U.S. embassies not to reopen, and that has caused a backlog of kids who want to get here that can't get their visas. So that's what's causing the problem.
And that's happening under the Biden administration now. So who are these J-1 visa holders?
Well, they come from a variety of countries. Jamaica, Dominican Republic, South America provides us with a lot during the winter because obviously their winters are summer and vice versa. Come from the Philippines, come from Europe. Turkey's a big country that sponsors them. The Ukraine is a big one as well. When we had the Tommy Bartlett show going, we got all our Finns, all of our J-1s right from Finland. We started that program long before J-1s were even known about. And, of course, they're not open. So it's a taxing problem in the community. We have about 4,000 J-1 students that come here in the summertime. There's about 6,000 overall a year round. And we're going to be lucky if we can get up to 45% of the normal year. We're certainly holding our breath for July and August because they really have sped up the visa the process. We've had a lot of kids who get their visa and they're here in 2 or 3 days, which is quite frankly unheard of.
Sure, ready to go. You said kids, these are specifically college students that come here?
Yes. They have to be enrolled in a secondary education, and most of them are freshmen, sophomore, and juniors in college who want to come to the United States to experience our culture. And this work culture program has been very, very successful under the leadership of the State Department.
Okay, so they come here for that work experience and also for a cultural experience.
That's correct. In fact, every employer is to make sure that each of the J-1 students have at least three cultural experiences, one a month. In our case, we probably had two a month because we wanted them to really get the flavor of especially the Midwest.
Sure. You mentioned you hope that we'll be at 45% for the norm of what the number of J-1 visa employees you have. How is that affecting businesses and attractions in Wisconsin Dells?
Well, certainly the businesses that are open year-round don't have near the problem as just the seasonal businesses. For example, you take Noah's Ark, Mount Olympus, Kalahari, and Wilderness, which are our four largest businesses in town. They employ close to 5,000 people. And of that, about 33% of them would be in the summer J-1 program. So overall, that group of individuals are down about 1,500 employees. Hopefully, we'll be able to pick up more as this month goes on in July and August. Because, as you're well aware, in the tourism industry, service is very, very important, and we want to give our customers the very best experience that they can have.
Tom Deal is the president of Tommy Bartlett, Inc. in Wisconsin Dells and president of the Attractions Association. We're taking your calls as we talk about a shortage of workers in Wisconsin Dells when it comes to tourism. 800-642-1234. There's a line for you at that number. Does your family or group of friends go to Wisconsin Dells during the summer? Have you heard of the staffing shortages there? Maybe that's changed your plans. Perhaps you work or live in Wisconsin Dells or another tourist community in Wisconsin. What should we know about what's happening in business in your part of the state? Give us a call now at 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. Tom, do you know, is this a problem that's happening other places in the country? Are you in contact with other people leading tourism areas?
Yeah, it's across the country. No one is spared with this problem. And, of course, the enhanced unemployment benefits that the government's giving on top of the unemployment compensation that each state is giving is exacerbating the problem, because if you make the calculations on what they're earning to stay home, it's almost $18 an hour. So that affects more so to places that need American workers more than they need J-1 workers. Certainly the seasonal worker, the seasonal businesses and the seasonal locations, you know, I don't care if it's Disney or it's Six Flags or whatever it is, they're all suffering because of the shortage of labor.
And we have heard business leaders say the enhanced unemployment from the federal government is hurting their ability to hire workers. We've also heard pushback that is, well, if companies are short workers, pay them more. And then maybe in this case, you wouldn't be able to have as many workers from overseas, but you might be able to attract more workers from Wisconsin. Is that part of the calculation that businesses are running right now?
No, I disregard that whole thought process. What is happening, especially in a state like Wisconsin, where we have an aging population, we don't have the availability of the workforce that's necessary to the way we have grown the economy here. And I don't care if it's manufacturing, agriculture, or tourism. We certainly need the workers in all sectors. Now, you take a minimum wage. Minimum wage is $7 and something. The marketplace stabilizes that. Up pre-COVID, a minimum wage here probably was in the neighborhood of $12 an hour. Obviously, now it's ratcheted up because people need to attract outside Americans to come here to work. And so you can find jobs in the Dells, plenty of them, that are at $15 an hour, as high as $20 an hour for starting. Because there's just a shortage of Americans that are working. In this area, we have dorms to handle probably, I'd say, 2,500, 2,600 people. And so one of the problems that we faced, and that's why we started building the dorms, was because as college communities, landlords started imposing 12-month leases or 11-month leases, there was a disincentive for kids to leave wherever they were for college. So we built these housing facilities so that employers could help subsidize so that kids weren't paying double rents here and there. And that was working up until COVID.
Mm. We just talked about, you just mentioned age of Wisconsin workers, and we've got Joy, who's given us a call from Eagle at 800-642-1234. Joy, what do you want to say here in this conversation?
Well, I think your guest partially addressed my question. My concern is about, you know, recruitment of Wisconsinites, young Wisconsinites, and especially kids in inner cities or in minority communities. And why wouldn't it be possible to do an out-of-season, to do recruitment and maybe training so kids would be prepared to come into the Dells and take these jobs? You know, I mean, maybe some of them don't quite have the skill set or have had job experience. But, you know, there's a lot of unemployed young people in the Milwaukee area, and I'm sure in some of the other major metropolitan areas. And I would think they would welcome $15.
Joy, thank you for that idea and question there. Tom Deal, what about adults in this college age range and connecting them with jobs in Wisconsin Dells?
Well, we started a program with Governor Doyle and with Mayor Barrett in Milwaukee, where the inner city areas where the employment rate is very, very low. And we started a program where we ran it for three years, recruiting inner city kids to come here and take these jobs. The problem you run into is there isn't one business that's going to take on the responsibility of housing anyone under 18 years old. So we had to put that, you had to be 18 or older, which takes you basically out of the high school. So we had the most success coming out of MATC in Milwaukee. I don't think they call it that anymore, but that's what it was. So we have tried recruitment on college campuses all across the state. We've held job fairs all across the state. But when you don't have the availability of workers, it's very, very difficult to get them.
Hmm. Thanks so much for that call, Joy, at 800-642-1234. We've got Abdullah from Madison on the line now. Hey, Abdullah.
Oh, hi.
What are you thinking about as we have this conversation about a labor shortage in Wisconsin Dells?
Oh, it's great, actually, to know how to apply and where to apply. And that's my question. Where to go and to apply, and whether it's overseas or here, how to start the process from if the gentleman will emphasize how to apply for it.
Abdullah, thanks for that question. And so we can talk about applying for J-1 visas, but also just for open positions, Tom.
Well, the J-1 process is a very complex process that you have to work with sponsors to get overseas kids. So you usually start that in October, November, and December prior to the summer. As far as the coordinating effort here, it all goes through the Wisconsin Dells Visitor and Convention Bureau. You just go on to wisdells.com to their site, and there's job posting board there that lists all the businesses that are looking for staff members, what type of jobs they are, and so on and so forth. So that resource is there, and it's been in existence for many years.
And if you don't have computer access, do you have a tip for us maybe that way?
Well, if you don't have computer access, you can call the Visitor and Convention Bureau at 608-254-8088 and then just ask to be sent to the job coordinator. And they can do it over the phone, give them a list of the businesses they're looking, and quite frankly, I think they'll even mail out the list.
Wow. Wow. Okay. We're talking with business leader Tom Deal about the workforce shortage in Wisconsin Dells. Thousands of workers who usually travel from overseas to work in our state are not able or perhaps willing to be here this summer. That's left businesses making difficult decisions about how to best serve customers. What do you think? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. I'm Keely Boltina. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Businesses in Wisconsin Dells are changing their operations as they short thousands of summer workers. They are adjusting when they're open and how they're catering to visitors as more people consider how they can find fun safely this summer. That's what we're talking about here on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina. Our guest is Tom Deal, who's president of Tommy Bartlett, Inc. in Wisconsin Dells and the Attractions Association. And your calls are welcome here on the Ideas Network. And now I want to welcome Stacy from Wisconsin Rapids, who wants to join this conversation. Good morning, Stacy.
Good morning. Thank you for having this helpful conversation. I used to work in the Dells, and it was a long time ago, probably a good over 35 years. And I worked there as a student at one of the water parks, of course, as so many people do. And I'm just wondering, at that time, you know, we didn't see as many foreign workers in the Wisconsin Dells. And I'm wondering if a lot has to do with the economics of it. You know, there's a lot of people who are interested in looking for work and a lot of students as well. And I'm just wondering if there were more opportunities and salaries and higher rates of pay, if that would make a difference in being able to find local workers within the United States. And secondly, I think a lot has to do with the economics at this time, as well as just people's readiness to return to the water parks and to return to the workforce. You know, ourselves, we're visiting, and I would love to bring my family and my children to the Dells, but that's not something we're going to do this year because our family isn't ready for that due to pandemic and issues that are going on there. So I wanted to see if you might be able to comment to the economics of the situation and providing lucrative opportunities for people to get back to work.
Yeah, Stacy, thank you for bringing up those points. And how do you respond, Tom, when you hear what Stacy has to say and what she's wondering?
Well, just to go back a little bit in history, when I got here in 1967, all the jobs in the Dells area were filled by the Dells kids, Baraboo, Reedsburg, Portage, and Adams. Unfortunately, those communities haven't grown as rapidly as this area has. So the reason we got into the J-1 program originally is we could not find enough Americans to fill the jobs. And certainly before indoor water park hotels were built, that's 5,000 less employees that we had at that time. So it's just a matter of the growth of the community. It has nothing to do with wages because one thing we have today used to be a seasonal operation, Memorial Day to Labor Day. Now it's a year-round operation, and the jobs available in middle management and senior management are going unfilled as well. And that's totally for another reason, and it has to do with, you know, housing. People commute from Sun Prairie, or the assistant general manager of these properties, because of the housing situation. And we're also working on that as well. As far as the business is concerned, we are having a banner year starting in January. In fact, it's ahead of 2017, which was the best year we ever had. And it'll continue because there's been such a pent-up demand. Our job, as we did last summer, was to make sure that people felt that we were doing it in a safe manner. Right now, I'll guarantee you that probably 60% of the workforce, of summer workforce, has been vaccinated once they opened up the ability to have 14 to 16, 18-year-olds vaccinated. So we're in a tremendous position here. We have quality experiences for families, and we will do the very, very best job that we possibly can with a limited staff, and that's going to require some businesses to make changes to their normal operating mode. But we will give the same high-quality experience that we have done for 100 years here.
Mm-hmm. Tom Deal is the president of the Attractions Association and Tommy Bartlett, Inc. in Wisconsin Dells. We're talking about a labor shortage there as tourism ramps up this summer, especially as it relates to visas. And we've got Jack from Eagle River who wants to talk with us now. Hey, Jack.
Yeah, I'd like to ask some questions because we have some of the same problems up here with regard to, well, it's called a worker shortage, but I think it's more of a failure to pay shortage. So my understanding on the J-1 visa was it was adopted in the 1960s as a form of cultural exchange that foreign students were to come to the United States to learn about American culture. Well, I'm not sure how foreign students learn about American culture by working in a checkout line at a grocery store, checking out American consumers, overindulging in food. Perhaps that might be a major aspect of American culture.
Jack, but I'm going to jump in here because I do want to make sure that Tom has a chance to respond to that, because Jack is saying J-1 visas are there. They're supposed to be for cultural exchange. And Jack's concerned about the way American businesses use these.
Well, Jack's totally wrong there. It is a combination work cultural program. And he may say that you don't get any cultural experience of being a checkout, but there are other hours of the day, and they have to have approved places that they can go to address the cultural part of it. In our case, we gave our J-1 students 2 days a week off so they could take a long weekend, go to Minneapolis, go to Chicago, go to Milwaukee, and we exposed them to everything. And so a lot of the kids went to preseason Packer games, and if that's not a cultural experience, I don't know what is.
Yeah, this is Wisconsin after all. How do you think that these shortages this summer might have long-lasting effects on businesses in Wisconsin Dells?
I don't think it's going to have any effect at all, because those who couldn't survive last year are gone. And unfortunately, there's only one business that's gone, and that's the Tommy Bartlett Show. And you know, obviously, we need lots of people at our facility every day, and that wasn't going to happen. But I think the long-term prospects of what we have going here and the development that's going to continue to take place to continue to make this a diversified tourism area, which is totally different than a Door County experience or a Northern Wisconsin experience. That's the beauty of Wisconsin. They have something for everyone.
Do you think these staffing shortages are felt, the economic effects are felt beyond the Wisconsin Dells?
Well, certainly, as I mentioned earlier, I was out in Salt Lake City and I've been in Florida, and they're suffering the same thing. And they don't have J-1 workers out in Salt Lake City because they don't need them, because they are year-round. But everyone is experiencing a labor shortage. Now, it's real easy to point to A, B, and C as being the cause of it, but there's so many things involved with it. Some people don't want to go to work yet because they're still fearful of COVID. Some want to stay home and collect the enhanced benefits. I mean, there's just a wide variety of in each locale as to what's going on. Ours, of course, is generally pushed because of our need for the summer J-1 workers. And
Yeah. On
a normal year, there are many, many, many more people, J-1 kids wanting to come here than we have availability for them. And so we encourage them to go to other parts of the country.
Yeah. Tom, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Tom Deal is the president of Tommy Bartlett, Inc. in Wisconsin Dells and president of the Attractions Association. And we talked about a workforce shortage in Wisconsin Dells. I'm Keeley Boltina. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.